Megatron, and it's a touchdown. The ball is fumbled into the end zone and fallen on by Cobb for a touchdown. So one absolute desperation moment. Rodgers gets it the other way. He's thrown down. We got a flag. The game's not over. Grabbed it by the face mask. Rodgers in trouble.
It's going to get there.
In the end zone. It is caught for the win. Richard Rodgers with a walk-off touchdown. A game ender for the Packers.
Game ender for the Packers, a game that we will never forget. I mean, that is one of the all-time finishers in NFL history. Aaron Rodgers to his brother Richard to win the game. We could have an entire podcast about just that play. Because really, there's one podcast to talk about 5 or 6 minutes about the first 59 minutes and 54 seconds of the game. And then we could just really talk about the last 6 seconds. That's all that matters. I'm Greg Rosenthal, here with Chris Wesseling. We're talking about the Thursday night Packers victory over the Lions, and then we will get to Dan Hanzus and Mark Sessler and Andrew Siciliano and all the games. But, Wes, what went through your mind when you saw that?
Well, that's true that it changed everything. It changed what we were going to write, but nobody wants to hear about that. It changes the fact that the Lions could have swept the rest of the season, run the table, and gone 9-7, and you could conceivably see them as a wild card team, and now it's hard to picture that at 8-8.
Not going to happen.
And the Packers seem to be free-falling out of the postseason picture, or at least to the periphery of it, with a chance to free-fall even farther, and now it looks like they're set for another playoff run.
You don't know if this will be a catalyst towards the Packers' offense solving some things or not, but that doesn't matter. They're 8-4 now. They are a much, much safer bet to make the playoffs. I think if they fell to 7-5 after this loss, then you start worrying about if they could fall right out. Now they could be in first place by the end of the weekend. And, I mean, Aaron Rodgers called it the greatest game he's been a part of since the Super Bowl. So he's not just talking about that play, which just had to have been an unbelievable high for him, but also the 20-0 comeback. I mean, if you had told me when the Packers were getting the ball with about 9 minutes left in the third quarter that they were going to win that game, it was 20-0 at that point. But even that, all this feels like prelude, though, because really the whole game was the last 6 seconds.
Yeah, well, back to that 20-0 deficit, it's not just that he overcame that, but how much was stacked against him with most of the second half, four of his offensive linemen out.
Yep.
The receiver still can't separate. The play calling never opens up a wide receiver for him. It relies on him to extend every play. And no running game. Eddie Lacy disappears once again. Everything stacked against Aaron Rodgers. Hits Devontae Adams with a perfect tight window throw. Scrambles for 17 yards for another touchdown. And then people can argue about that face mask. It clearly, the rule says no player shall twist, turn, or pull the face mask of an opponent in any direction. It was clearly pulled and twisted. So
I disagree. I think when you watch that play,
I'm watching it now in fast motion.
But
in slow motion.
That's in super slow motion. The rule says
in real time, it looked like a face mask too.
I think Dean Blandino, so the play you're talking about, Devin Taylor, hits Aaron Rodgers in the face mask. And of course, you guys probably watched the game and have seen this play. At the time that Aaron Rodgers gets pulled by his face mask, he has about 70 yards and 11 Detroit Lions to beat, and time has expired. That's how much the game is over. The thumb hits Rodgers in the face mask. I don't think he grasps it at all. Just kind of hits it.
It doesn't. I'm reading you the rules. It doesn't say grasp. No player shall twist, turn, or pull. He clearly twists and turns it. Rodgers' head jerks to the side with the base of a thumb in the corner of the face mask, pulling it to the side. That's a penalty.
We'll agree to disagree, and I think that Dean Blandino's statement was telling. Right after the game, he sent out a Twitter. He said, hand up to the mask, quick grab with finger, and head gets turned. At full speed, official is going to make that call almost every time. And I think that's totally fair. It was an understandable call. It will be made almost every time. He was not saying it was the correct call. He was saying in that situation, you're not going to.
I don't care if he was saying it. It is. It clearly is. You can see it. And
it was
if fans have an expectation that what they see on slow motion can also be translated to real time by a referee, they're delusional.
Right.
Fans cannot have that expectation.
Right. I think it definitely looked different in slow motion. But that's all almost beside the point. The reality is they were 79 yards away with 6 seconds to go. That game was over. They got the ball back with 23 seconds left. My lead for the article was going to be Matthew Stafford and the Detroit Lions defense playing very complimentary. And the biggest play of the game until that point was Matthew Stafford's third and long to a receiver we've never heard about through a non-existent window to burn some clock off, and it appeared to end the game. The Packers get the ball back with 23 seconds left, a couple incompletions, and they have 79 yards to go with 6 seconds left.
They do the desperation lateral thing even.
Right.
And they win the game.
That's what I mean. Richard Rodgers is the one who threw the ball to Aaron Rodgers, which at the time looked like an insane lateral because there was no one behind Aaron Rodgers anymore. I mean, Richard Rodgers threw it about 20 yards back. Aaron Rodgers, if he looked behind him, there's no more Packers left. So the game is over at that point. And then Aaron Rodgers to pull off this play, and it's not a total
fluke. Escapes a sack from Jason Jones first.
Right.
Then rolls out. And uncorks a beautiful 61-yard pass.
I was looking forward to that because I was thinking if anyone can throw a beautiful Hail Mary, it's Aaron Rodgers. And, you know, Phil Simms pointed out that the height on it really made the difference. And you wrote the post about Richard Rodgers, who came on the NFL Network set after the game, and he had a great nugget for them.
He had a great nugget, which reminded me immediately of Brandon Bostic last year in the NFC title game. Admitted afterwards, I was supposed to block for Jordy Nelson.
Mm.
Richard Rodgers says, I was supposed to box out for Davante Adams. As soon as I saw the ball released from Aaron Rodgers' hands, I knew I had a chance to catch it. So he deviated from his assignment, and it worked.
It worked, and in great athleticism by Richard Rodgers. I mean, that was a clean, nice jumping catch. There was really nothing sneaky about that. He made the right choice not to let Davante Adams try to catch it. And the crazy thing is that his dad, for his whole life, he has heard about the Stanford band play.
And which is such a famous play that it's known as the play.
Right. It's known as the play. And now his son, Richard Rodgers, has an even more prominent role in a play that maybe it doesn't go down with the Stanford band play, but
Wisconsin it will.
It's going to go down as one of the great endings of all time. And my immediate thought when this happened, like a lot of other people, I assume, was, well, this is payback for the Fail Mary. Because that's the other craziest ending I've ever been writing about for NFL.com when it happened. And in the second it happened, I just knew that's all anyone's going to be talking about.
I don't think I've ever seen a Hail Mary touchdown of that length.
No, I never have.
In the NFL. It's the exact same length of Doug Flutie's touchdown, the famous 1984 one, but I'm not sure I've seen that in the NFL.
And it happens by a guy who's the reigning MVP and against a franchise who has had some of the worst things happen to them. I mean, and just when they were believing something that seemed impossible, that they were going to win their fourth straight game, that they looked like one of the best teams in the league, that they maybe could run the table, for that to happen in their home stadium is about as devastating a loss as you can possibly have.
It could change two coaching outlooks, too. That I think the way this game went, that Tom Clements would have come under a lot of fire and Mike McCarthy would have had a lot of pressure to take play calling duties again, because the Packers were doing things they've never done in the Aaron Rodgers era, going through droughts they haven't experienced in 20 years. And then on the other side, Jim Caldwell might not get out of jail free card now.
It's absolutely true. I could talk about this one forever, but we should get to the rest of the week. 12 games we're in. Wow. Deep into the
week
season.
13.
Week 13
wow.
Games. I knew I messed it up there. Week 13 games. It's an amazing start to the week. The fact that they followed the Browns finish with this finish. What's next? Who knows? Let's send it over to Dan and find out.
The Around the NFL Podcast. Still thinks about the gold standard sometimes.
Each time the wind blows.
Welcome back to another edition of the Around the NFL Podcast. My name is Dan Hansis, and I'm joined by a room filled with heroes, Mark Sessler, Chris Wessling, and Greg Rosenthal. What's up, boys?
Hey, Dan.
That's true. I mean,
we do.
Gold standard, when one day we're going to put his name, it's going to go up in the rafters as one of the great producers in the history of the Around the NFL Podcast. But at the same time, let's just say it like it is. Sydney is killing it behind the glass. And the couple, what has it been, about 6 weeks now? You've been with us.
Six?
Full-time
I've been
producer.
Here since
it's been like 4 months.
But as like the full-time, like behind the glass person?
Brandon left in October, early October. So what would that be?
Yeah.
Two months.
Oh, I nailed it. So
I think that Sydney and Gold Standard would be fast friends. There's a lot of shared qualities there.
I disagree. I think they would be bitter enemies. Gold Standard hates Disneyland. Well, I don't know that.
Well, that's we don't know that at
all. Gold Standard doesn't hate anything.
He hates bad soccer. I don't know. I don't think Zach Goldman, wherever you are in the world right now.
Well, I don't like soccer, so maybe that would.
He'd
be out at the pub.
Talk about going
straight off.
Talk about going in the rafters. A Matt Money Smith delivery on these intros are getting better and better.
I think there was a little Michael Jackson ballad at the end of that.
Can't stop loving you.
The shadowy league figures keep on getting in tighter on me when it comes to what we can use with music. We might be in trouble for that. I got to check downstairs after this. Sydney, watch out.
I'll be on my best lookout for that.
Expect three different meetings all saying the same thing.
Or different thing.
Yes, this is the Thursday preview, special preview edition of the Around the NFL podcast. Of course, you heard at the top of the show, Greg Rosenthal and Chris Wessling, the A-team. Is that accurate, Mark?
Yeah, I mean, typically.
Yes. Give you a recap of Thursday night football between the Green Bay Packers and Detroit Lions at Ford Field. Our job now is to tell you about the rest of the games. And let me tell you something. 32 teams. Teams played, 30 teams, 15 games, no buys. Yes or no, Greg?
Means no let up in this show. 15 games to crank through. We're gonna.
I'm already exhausted thinking about it.
Oh yeah.
I've been
working out.
Really?
Just for this show. No.
You've never been to a gym before, right?
Have you now lifted a weight in your life?
I've never really lifted weights. No. Hmm. But you know,
got a runner's body.
Other ways to be in shape.
Sure.
Swimming?
Do I don't
swim
really
a lot?
Do that. No, I'm not really a swimmer.
Yoga? Hot
no.
yoga?
No, I run.
Yogging?
I'm not really buying Greg's story.
Borrow Sessler's PS90.
It doesn't even make sense. Being in shape would not help you get through two more games.
I'm taking a vacation halfway through this podcast.
Well, that's fine. We'll carry on, Wes, if you just want to go like face down on the table about halfway through, because we got a lot to get to. Andrew Siciliano is going to drop by. He hasn't been here in a couple weeks. His producer came on the show, Berger, last week. So you knew Andrew was going to be close behind to make sure he establishes the status quo as it should be. Talent first, behind the what they call behind the below the liners. Is what they're called, you know, put them back in their place. That's the way true talent looks at things. Damashek taught me that.
He taught you a lot of things.
why don't we get to the games? We have so much to get to. So let's start with the 1 p.m. games. Is that okay, Greg?
Please. Why wouldn't we?
You still doing that other podcast?
The Jeselnik and Rosenthal Vanity Project. Or flip the names there, I guess. But, yeah, everyone should download it. If you like this show, you're bound.
Did you have an episode canceled?
Well, you'll have to listen in and see
sounds,
what happened. Yeah,
sounds a little contrived.
Got squashed.
Really? No, he just took the week off, and he's trying to sell the audience that the show got squashed.
Who of the two of you?
Isn't that what happened?
Who of the two of you is more vain, you or Jeselnik?
Oh, Jeselnik.
Wait, did you actually get?
I'm not even the most vain person in this room. Not even close.
Wait, where's that going?
Wait, you're saying that yourself. I mean,
Greg's on.
You're like dead last in the Common Man rankings.
Wait,
Common Man's different than being vain.
I'm being serious now. Did you actually have an episode that got completely
got squashed?
Deep sixed.
Got squashed.
What was the subject matter?
Why could I talk about that now?
Well, why not?
Because then that would be deep sixth.
Wow, it must have been pretty graphic. All right, let's get to the games. Greg, uncomfortable talking about it, just trying to set up a little bit of a plug. But he's not taking it. He's not taking the bait.
Well, it's on Greg.
We got enough plug.
It got very strange in here.
I know.
We still have 15 games to get to.
Strange energy in the room.
You know, first we had last week's show, or the last show, we had the Greg's
trying to fix the light in my thing.
He's like, Greg, looking to doom the program. Here, let me help you.
It's all right.
Okay. Last show, you didn't like that I was talking about hot butts.
Yeah.
Now I'm trying to plug, and you know,
I think we know by now that people want hot butts. I mean, we've been heard a lot on Twitter. They loved it.
Well, someone made a website, hotbutts.com.
Yeah, I can't believe it wasn't taken.
I am shocked.
Maybe the Z at the end.
I wouldn't click on that.
All right, let's get into it. Start with the 1 p.m. games. The Houston Texans, dare I say, the hottest team in football. Not called the Carolina Panthers. Oh, Panthers fans, relax. Jeez, you guys are a touchy bunch. But the Texans are playing great football. Now 6-5, tied for first in the AFC South. Defense playing as well as any unit in the league right now. They travel to Buffalo. I love this game. I think this is a very good game for this reason, guys. I think the Bills, the one thing we've learned about them is while they are definitely a flawed team, they are also a team that on any given week can play like the team they were, the best case scenario back in August they could have been. They have that gear to them. I think that's going to come out and the Texans are going down. Wes, you disagree with me. Tell me why.
I have entirely bought in on the Texans. This is the best defense in the NFL, allowing 8.8 points per game over last month, 250 yards, the best marks in the league over that span. J.J. Watt, Jadeveon Clowney, Whitney Mercilus. Their secondary is playing lights out with Kevin Johnson, the rookie, in the lineup. And then on offense, as Greg pointed out last week, Bill O'Brien has gone innovative and creative. He did it because how are you going to move the ball with T.J. Yates as your quarterback? And now with Hoyer in there, they kept a lot of that wildcat. They promoted a guy named Keem Hunt off the practice squad, runs about a 4.35 40. They give him the ball four or five times a game in creative ways, and they're finding ways to move the ball. And really, Romeo Crennel's defense is playing lights out. I think they're going to go into Buffalo and show Rex what a dominant defense really is.
Oofa. Greg.
They're deeper. I mean, you said Kevin Johnson. That's as good a trio of cornerbacks as any in the league right now. The way Jonathan Joseph Johnson and Kareem Jackson are playing, Bernardrick McKinney has been making plays for them.
He's calling the plays.
At linebacker. They're just tough to get through in terms of all levels of their defense. With all that said, I agree with Dan. I think the Bills are capable of winning this game, absolutely. I mean, they have plenty of talent. Their offense can come and go a little bit. It's really the defense that I'm more worried about.
I mean, Buffalo's offense is at its best when they are running the ball well, and they've done that in many games this year. But, Wes, you nailed it. The Texans' run defense, especially last month and a half, is shutting teams down to like 72 yards per game. And nothing is more embarrassing if you're Rex Ryan – then after all the hubbaloo about your exotics blitz schemes.
It's Hubalaba.
Hubalaba.
Hubalabaloo.
You have 10 sacks if you're the Bills defense. That is less than J.J. Watt, the entire Buffalo defense. And this comes...
Wasn't supposed to be that way.
No, this comes with the personnel that set a franchise record in sacks 2 years ago with Mike Pettine and led the league last season under Jim Schwartz. In comes Rex Ryan. Everyone's billing this guy as some defensive mastermind.
All right, Mark.
10 sacks. Outrageous.
So fired up about Rex Ryan.
I think right now in week 13, the Texans are as good as any team in the AFC.
That is an interesting call, Wes. They are a team to keep an eye on as far as picks this game.
I disagree so much.
You have to believe in Brian Hoyer if you say that.
Because of the offense, because of Hoyer. He's managed it well, but we always overrate the team that just played the Saints. It's happened every week.
Okay, they beat the Bengals, who are 9-2.
Right, but it wasn't.
They beat the Jets, who are 6-5. The Patriots, I'm not saying in January the Patriots won't be much better, but as they're currently comprised, I'm not sure they're much better.
I would still take the Broncos and the Bengals. I know they beat the Bengals, but that's just 1 week. Just the running backs, the quarterback. You have DeAndre Hopkins, which is incredible, but it's not enough.
Well, scientists, the good thing about football is we're going to find out in about a month. We all picked the Bills with the exception of – no, Wessling and Patra actually picked the Texans. So Patra and Wessling also 1-2 in the picks as we come down the home stretch.
Maybe you should be copying off of us.
This could be a huge matchup, a swing matchup, as Hanzus and Sessler tied for third place, the Renegade Orr buried in the back end. And more, by the way, a little teaser, more wild Renegade picks from Connor.
How far back are you of Kevin?
We are
about 9-10 back.
We are nine back.
That's over.
Wes is
I'm two back.
Too bad.
I'm not allowed to
I was
comment.
17 back at one point.
Stick a fork in it, though. 5 weeks, too many people, nine
Greg,
games.
Greg, come on, man.
I'm just out
come
to
on,
beat
man.
Dan. I just Dan is my season.
You should be happy that I stuck a fork in you. We've stuck forks in three teams that are currently in the playoffs.
I just don't like you talking about the picks, man. You quit on us, bro. Like Brett Favre quit on the Packers. I watched that timeline. NFL Network's answer to 30 for 30, I believe. Very good. Debuted after Thursday Night Football. You should check that out.
Good plug.
Thank you, professional Zeuser. Moving on, the San Francisco 49ers travel to Soldier Field to face the Chicago Bears. This is a 5-6 team for the Bears, but you know, clinging to life in the NFC playoff picture, absolutely have to have it against the 49ers, who have been better with Blaine Gabbert, surprisingly, than they were with Colin Kaepernick, but still, the Bears have to have it. But Mark, I'll say this. A couple of weeks ago, I remember the Bears being in a similar situation. I'm kind of blanking on who that team was, where it's like a had-to-have-it game, you know, get grown, and they blew the game. Are they going to take care of business this time?
I think they will. I mean, I only buy the 49ers when they're at home because they've been a completely different team at home. I don't know why that is. That doesn't speak a lot about any team when that's the situation. But Chicago is getting the best season we've seen from Jay Cutler in a long time. It's changed my opinion of him to some degree. Well, all right, the Trestman year was good. I think he's making better decisions right now. You could say Josh McCown outplayed Cutler that season.
You could say it because it happened.
There you go. I mean, I just think this Bears offense and the Bears in general, going into the year, I thought this is the most boring team in sports potentially, and they might go 1-15, and it's not true. And I think Vic Fangio is one guy that wants to lay a hurt on San Francisco.
Love that coordinator heat with Mark Sessler.
I think he's going to do it too. I mean, they don't have a lot of big names on defense, but the 49ers cannot run the ball, and it comes down to stopping Blaine Gabbert. It can be done.
We talked about coaches on the hot seat in our previous show, some hot butt talk. Jim Tomsula didn't come up, but he probably has to win a couple games, Greg, right? To be safe here, 3-13 I don't think would cut it.
That's what I thought. Ian Rappaport, we were just chatting about it. He tended to believe that Tomsula is a lot more safe than we would imagine. That
is it because they put their butt on a line for him?
I guess, but they also put it on the line for Trent Baalke. They're saying this is his organization, and I think there's some thought around that team that they might get rid of Baalke after this year. I don't trust that ownership group to stay the course or to not get distracted by whatever shiny coaches out there at all. So I think if they ended the season really ugly, it wouldn't shock me if they made big changes. But they're not playing ugly right now. They're playing competitive. I mean, I don't think they're cashing in games. I mean, they're winning some games. They're competing with the Seahawks.
Blaine Gabbert's fun to watch. I'm excited about him.
Gabbert's pretty fun to watch. They're not that. They're a little better than they were early in the year.
If they can get in like a bootleg offense in there, he'd be perfect for that.
And Shane Drone was not terrible last week.
No.
He helped on the ground. He caught passes. I just think there's not a lot of talent in San Francisco, but Gabbert's
one more guy. Their first-round pick, Eric Armstead, is playing really well the last couple of weeks.
Shane Drone was the first running back in the entire league this year to play every snap of a game last week. And he's looked like a competent guy. Nothing great. But
cut by Cleveland. Nice job.
And the other thing about Jim Tomsula is, you know, I thought he was put in an almost impossible situation this season. As long as this team is playing hard and they're competitive, he deserves another year to really start to build something there. It wouldn't be fair if they dumped him after giving him such a tough task. We'll see what happens. We all think the Bears are going to win this game, but we'll see about that.
It's a tough matchup for Gabbert. Fangio, they didn't win in Green Bay because of their offense. They scored 17 points and didn't score the entire fourth quarter. The Packers, I think, had 5 possessions in the fourth quarter, and they couldn't get one single touchdown. The coach that turns Tracy Porter back into a quality starting cornerback is a coach that's pretty damn good.
Moving on. The Cincinnati Bengals got back in the win column and moved to 9-2 with an easy win over the Rams. They now head to Cleveland to face a Browns team that has to be just gutted after what happened on Monday night. Of course, it was the now infamous in Cleveland lore. What was it called?
It has a name.
Kick six.
It was like a kickoff.
There's so many names to Browns losses at this point.
It was
point.
A blocked field goal run back kick for six. A touchdown as time expired. What was it?
Kick six.
There
the block
is.
Off?
But that was the same thing as the Alabama play a couple years ago.
Yeah.
People just copied it.
A crushing defeat. But again, you know what? The Browns are playing hard for Mike Pettine. They're not getting any results. Now 2-14 in their last 16 games, dating back to last season. And now they get the Bengals.
Mm. We keep saying that, but isn't it 2-15? I guess there's no point in me pointing
out. Well, it is 2-15.
Well, Oh, I guess that people just like banging the number 16 there. Chris Wessling, I don't know if we're going to see Tyler Eifert in this game for the Bengals. Will it matter?
No. The Bengals, I mean, they lost to the Texans when nobody thought the Texans were good. Now that we know they're good. So their two losses are against a really good Houston team and on the road against Arizona, which is one of the best teams in the NFL. The Bengals are phenomenal, and Jeremy Hill is coming off his best game of the season. They're getting stronger.
Yeah, you don't need Eifert. And, you know, anyone that's suffered through watching Browns games this year, you can run the ball all day long on this team. They're out of position on too many plays every single game. There's wide open holes, and you've got way more weapons than Cleveland does functional players in the secondary. I don't see this as even being a close game.
Now, if you could put money or ever predict that a Golston was on the way, and for new fans of the show, a Golston is our statistical term for when a team does not have a QB hit or a sack.
Some people call it a dirty Peter, but you know.
That's true. That was the other name. That was, I think, some got some votes. If there ever there was a game there's going to be a Golston, it's Browns trying to go up against this Bengals offensive line, which is really playing well and is the key, I think, to everything they do.
Yeah, and Cleveland's their own worst enemy. You have to go back to 2012 when they played the same quarterback in both games against Cincinnati. Marvin Lewis has faced, I think it's 15 different Browns quarterbacks during his tenure with the team, which speaks to absolute dysfunction. And now you're rolling Austin Davis out. And I think Austin Davis did an adequate job on Monday night. But again, it's someone that has no chemistry and very few snaps with the players around him, and you're in December.
Terrible job by the Browns, as usual.
Well, they're sticking to their guns, whether we like it or not.
Sticking to their guns. It's absolutely ridiculous. We said it. We were in the huddle, the work commissary here, 2 days ago, and we were all in agreement that what Manziel did, whether it was lying to the team or, you know, clubbing on the bye week, you know, okay, we understood that he got disciplined for it. But what happened on Monday night, having to be benched for that game, which was, you know, such a great game to want to be a part of, and even McCown gets hurt, and he had a chance to go in there and be the hero, and instead you just had 100 sideline shots of him looking like a stiff. That was enough punishment. But instead, whatever's going on in that building, whether it's the front office or the coach, you know, getting a little too tough, they have blown this as much as you can, and they're just going to send Manziel out of town apparently now, and not know whether he'll ever get back on his feet or whether he's any good, and they're just going to roll the dice. I hate this move.
I think he'll start again, and I hope I'm wrong, because my sandwich proposition that said Austin Davis is going to start more games than Johnny Manziel is like the Rudy of sandwich propositions. People said it couldn't be done. It looked all the way but dead, and then in comes Austin Davis, that big touchdown. Unfortunately, Manziel already started 3 games, so there's 5 games left of the season. I really need Austin Davis to run the table here to take the
possible
lead, which I feel like it's unlikely. I feel like it's more likely that Johnny Manziel does get back in there. But wouldn't it be great? This is something America can really rally behind.
America?
Me and like, Austin Davis, two little guys that's an underdog.
It sounds like it's about you.
Do we have an It's About Me Greg Rosenthal drop?
Austin Davis is like 7 inches taller than Greg.
By the way,
it is. Now we do.
The Rudy.
No one will be able to tell the difference, man.
Can
impression
you turn off
so
the light on that? I can do it for you.
Greg's cell phone, currently he has the flashlight device open, and it's been on for 35
He won't let
minutes.
Me help him. I
like
know how to do it.
Like a thousand suns.
By the way, the ultimate Rudy go get your lunch was last year when I said Case Keenan would start more games than Ryan Mallett. Case Keenan was out of the league for like 15 games
That's
last
true.
Year. And then
That's
he got signed true. Randomly to Houston and started a game.
That's true.
You
That's
didn't.
Point.
It's fair, dog.
Yeah, but that was Rudy. Rudy didn't win either. Rudy was just a scrub.
Great analogy, then.
All right, moving on. Would you guys surprised if I told you that Connor took the Browns?
Yes.
Well, he didn't do it. We all took the Bengals. Moving on, the Baltimore Ravens. Yes, they were the team that was on the winning side, of course, of the kick six, as it is now known in NFL lore. I guess.
Is it the blocked kick six?
I don't know.
That does not exactly roll off the tongue.
They head to Miami now to face a corpse Dolphin team that fired Bill Lazor, replaced him with one of Tannehill's cronies from his Texas A&M days, Zach Taylor. Is that the guy in Hanson?
Right.
Okay. And now they are going to attempt to allow Ryan Tannehill. And I thought it was very telling in the news yesterday's Miami Herald, I think I saw it in a couple other places. Tannehill openly speaking about how he's really looking forward to the bright horizon in Miami now that he'll have some input on the offense and the ability to audible out of plays. It's kind of remarkable to me that in 2015, a $96 million quarterback was that handcuffed in an office. But that, Wes, is what was happening in Miami. Now they get Baltimore at home.
What a thankless individual Ryan Tannehill is. Mm. Bill Lazor gets him a $96 million contract. He played the best 3 months of Tannehill's career happened under Lazor's watch in a gimmick offense, and he basically kicks him out the door and dances on his grave.
He certainly did. I mean, you could have done a little jock speak and danced around it a little bit, but Tannehill basically just outright said it, that he feels like he's in a much better place now with Lazor fired.
Well, great. Enjoy your five games with Zach Taylor, because they're going to have a new – I mean, seriously, they're going to have a new coach next year. So that's why this whole move on some level didn't make any sense. But I guess the only way it makes sense is if you're twisted enough, and they are, to believe, hey, we're not out of it yet. We're two games out of the playoffs. This is our only chance for, you know, 30 different guys who are on the staff to keep their jobs next year is win five straight and make the playoffs. They still think they have a chance to do that. That's the only reason why you make that move.
They're playing the right opponent because their coach convinced the Ravens 2 weeks ago that they're the playoff team.
I disagree, by the way. I know it's tricky, an offensive coordinator sticking around, but they have so much invested in Tannehill and jobs are on the line. I think even if you're not keeping Dan Campbell, which I imagine they're not, if Tannehill plays really well with Taylor leading the way and he talks up Taylor, which wouldn't surprise me because their history together, I wouldn't be shocked if he was on the staff of whoever was the coach next year. I think these games mean something beyond just making a playoff.
But then you're limiting who you're hiring. Taylor.
But I can also see with a Mike Tannenbaum team that being part of the conversation.
Well, I don't like that dynamic at all, because if you're Miami, the only reason that you made all these moves was, in theory, because you're a nice warm weather city that attracts big names to go out and get that big name coach. And you can't tell them, oh, by the way, you have to keep A or B as your coordinator.
Fergie is a big Zach Taylor fan.
They never get their man anyway.
Yeah, there's nothing more overrated than the, like, Miami is going to get us great, especially coaches.
Well, him Jimmy Johnson, but that's decades ago.
Right. Now it's been Joe Philbin and Cam Cameron.
Well,
that'd be a fun
owner will fly his helicopter all around the country. He just doesn't come back with anyone.
I like the idea of the owner flying like a rinky-dink helicopter like across America in search of the next stop.
Well, he doesn't know how to fly anything.
Who was the guy in DuckTales who was the helicopter pilot?
What? Wow, that's a deep dive on DuckTales.
Is that Scrooge McDuck?
He had a really weird name. And he would always crash the helicopter.
Probably ended in duck.
Copter McHelicopter?
Something like that. It had a Mick in it, I think.
Why did the Jeselnik show get canceled last week? Mm. What happened?
I can't speak about it. I've been told.
Can you speak around it?
By NFL media if we want to continue to just shut up about it.
Come from the top, or did it come from the middle?
Well, middle top.
I mean, we were told in a high-level meeting, just don't get on anyone's radar as a podcast. So you guys have violated the number one rule of staying on the air. You're just on everyone's radar now.
It's a catch-22. You have to stay so small, you can't get on anyone's radar.
It's true. It's quite a balance.
You can't ever get further ahead in the company if you're not on anyone's radar. Tricky.
It's ugly.
Launchpad McQuack.
Thank you, Wes.
An able flyer, launchpad can scarcely set a plane down without a massive crash.
I like that you're 42 and that show came out in the 90s and you're real plugged in.
Don't age me. I'm only 41.
Oh, I apologize.
This is where Wes.
My little brothers watched it relentlessly.
Oh, okay. Yeah, because you're the second oldest, right?
Yes.
All right, let's move on. The Seattle Seahawks, big win over the Steelers in their building this past Sunday. And now they travel to Minnesota. This is... dare I say, the game of the week?
Well, they never turn out to be, but beforehand, sure.
Okay.
Well, no, right? Am I wrong? It's like this is a game that will be like 35-7.
Well, how about Cardinals-Bengals?
How about Sunday night?
How Broncos, about Cardinals-Seahawks? How about Patriots-Broncos? We've had some good games of the week.
Mark, your cynicism isn't welcome here, okay?
Patriots-Broncos, just last week, baby.
Maybe it's not Wes, but it's me that will sit the second half of the show out. I've heard enough.
All right, so the Vikings, yes, they are all alone, again, atop the NFC North at 8-3. And here is another big test for this team. And you know, I'm sure the subreddit is they've turned up the volumes on their transistor radios. What is going to come out of the mouths of the Around the NFL team, and specifically Chris Wessling, the number one enemy, the Joker to their Batman? This is a team that had a chance to really take control of the division 2 weeks ago against the Packers at home. Couldn't get the job done. Now here's another test at home against the back-to-back defending conference champions, Chris Wessling. Are the Vikings going to take care of business and hold on to first place and send a message to everyone straight from subreddit?
You give subreddit way too much credit calling them Batman. They're more like a hobbit.
Oh. Fire. Shots fired.
Well, I hope the Vikings win a game this week, because it would be the first time they beat a good team all year. So this will be a test for them. They are a good team. They've held 9 of 11 opponents under 20 points. That is great defense. I want to see it. I think the Vikings are a good team. I want to see if they're a NFC North champion kind of team, because they will finally beat a good team this week.
I think they're going to win. And
wow.
I really do. I think this will be the time.
Mark has been intimidated by the subreddit. That's my theory. Back-to-back picks with them, though. 3 weeks.
Well, but I've been correct.
Well, you know.
I mean,
not,
part
not
of it is
the Packers, you weren't.
Well, you're right.
I'm sorry.
But this
Go
time
ahead.
I'm going to be right. Dan's theory is completely wrong, by the way. I don't care at all about subreddit or whatever it is, their message board. I mean, I think what they're all –
their little message
board. Well, what Vikings – I have a very good friend who's a Vikings fan, and basically I think they feel overlooked at this point in the season. And if you're a Vikings fan, it's fine to feel that way. I don't have a
problem
with that.
I have a friend that is also a Vikings fan who sends me nasty texts. Maybe it's a fan base thing, not just the subreddit, but feels the same way that the media should be seeing Adrian Peterson
right.
as an MVP candidate, that they should be seen as a superpower in the NFC. I just need to see more.
People need to get over the media doesn't pay enough attention to us bit. And I used to be like this too. I'm not, it's a natural thing, but it's the dumbest thing in fandom that there is. How come the media doesn't give us more credit? Like, why aren't they talking? Like, what does that matter to you?
But it does matter. It doesn't matter to you, but I think it matters. You're on the media side of it at this point. Fans probably in the season like this, they aren't thinking from that angle. They just feel disrespected, and they're probably hearing the players saying we're disrespected. And so you want to change the
tide. I'm saying enjoy your team. Focus on the positive.
But, you know, you want to do it, then go out and stamp the Seahawks at home.
You want to be
– exactly.
This is, they have to do it. You have to do this, because otherwise you've lost to Green Bay and Seattle in less than a month. And it is hard to take that team seriously if you can't take care of business.
Especially at home, and I don't think they're going to, and it wouldn't surprise me if Seattle won this game convincingly, because I think Seattle is turning the corner, and we're still talking about them as a team that's struggling. They've won 4 out of 5 games. They won a game where Russell Wilson didn't get outside the pocket at all. They scored 39 points on the Steelers. I think it's a very...
By the way, go ahead.
I just think it's a very good sign that they can win a game where their defense has a poor performance at home. It reminds me a little bit of how they were playing at the end of the 2012 season, when you didn't know when the Seattle offense was going to drop 35 on you.
Take a look at Seattle's schedule, by the way, after this game. I did the NFC playoff picture look back earlier this week. And if they can get by Minnesota this week, let me just take a look at this again. The next 3 weeks, they have matchups against the Ravens, Browns, and Rams. That's a combined 10-23, those three teams. And then a Week 17 matchup against the Cardinals, but a Cardinals team that conceivably can be resting starters. Do not be surprised if a month from now the Seahawks are 10-6 or 11-5.
I will not be surprised.
I'd be surprised if they lose less, if they don't win 10 games.
I would too.
Well, but you just picked them to lose the last possible game that they can. That means that gets them to 6
subreddit.
Losses, and they win the next 4.
But that's fine. I think they can do that.
Right.
Wes is taking on the battle.
They have to win in Arizona, though. If they can't win in Minnesota, they're going to have trouble winning in Arizona. Yet it's possible they could be resting the starters. It seems unlikely, just because seedings and all that. The way
well,
the
if
NFL
they're,
works out.
I mean, if they're 13-3, and the Cardinals and the Panthers are 15-1 or something, it's certainly
yeah,
in play.
If they have the 2 seed, they'd have to definitely have the 2 seed, not the 3 seed, not the 1 seed. They have to be locked right.
There is a window.
It's certainly possible.
It has to be Adrian Peterson's game, though, because that's your offense, and you're playing a team that hasn't allowed a 100-yard rusher all season, and the Vikings have the second fewest big plays through the air of any team in the league. So you're a run-based team, and you've got to win it that way, and I think they can do it. We'll see.
I'm glad you brought that up, and I know we should move on, but Adrian Peterson right now, we haven't talked about it that much, is playing unbelievable. His performance last week against the Falcons was as good a game as I've seen out of Adrian Peterson. I would say the same thing about, I think it was the Raiders game 2 or 3 weeks.
I feel like we're saying it almost every
week. He is fun to watch. I don't know. I just didn't watch it till the middle of the week, and he was just so impressive. It's like it's 2007. It's Adrian Peterson and Tom Brady are the two best players in the league.
He might be the GOAT.
If I had to go back and do my MVP list over again, I'd have him higher.
Yeah.
In terms of that game, we have, Jess Mark with the hero pick on the Vikings. Moving on, Gotham. I'm going to call it. This is a loser goes home match between the New York Giants and the New York Jets. The Jets are 6-5. The Giants 5-6. We are not going to have the Darrell Revis, Odell Beckham matchup, which is a bummer. Revis, this is obviously a pretty serious head injury he's dealing with. He did not practice again on Thursday. Todd Bowles all but ruled him out today, Thursday. So do not expect to see Revis on the field, which puts the Jets in a very tough spot against the most explosive wide receiver in football. Antonio Cromartie's skill set does not match up well with Odell Beckham. Buster Screen, that would be a bad situation. They're going to have to do a lot of double teaming, and that could leave issues for the rest of the defense. So no Revis makes me very nervous about this game. As an acknowledged gangrene fan, Greg, your thoughts?
Well, we predict headlines from the future every Friday on NFL Now, if you ever want to check that out. And I already told you that the Jets are going to win this game.
Oh, that's right. Yes.
And not only that, something strange is going to happen. You know, I think this is an emotional game here for the Giants. You don't want to lose to your tenants at MetLife Stadium.
Whoa, slow down. No. You have the wrong,
I know they're no
wrong
longer
business
tenants.
Arrangement. We're very sensitive about that. We were the tenants at Giants
no longer.
Stadium.
I know.
But that's all bull and it's over. All right, man?
That's
poor
true.
Sydney.
I think it would be a tough loss for Tom Coughlin and that organization, which is on thin ice right now. You know, top to bottom to take.
My
I think
favorite,
the Jets are a better team. They
my favorite
are,
thing about this rivalry,
like
which Todd Bowles called not a rivalry this week, is that it no longer involves Rex Ryan.
He circled it back to Rex. I like
well,
it.
Well, no, because no one could make a bigger deal about this thing before it happened than Rex Ryan. And bottom line,
but
you're
that's
the
not necessarily bad. Why is that so bad that he injected a little bit of juice into it?
Because he doesn't follow through.
Well, sometimes he does.
This is a better team under Todd Bowles, and this is not a great Giants team, but they do have Odell Beckham, and I think that he alone could win this game for him.
This game is missing juice, and I'm okay with Rex being out of the picture for the Jets now, but clearly his absence is felt this week. All it's been is just about 4,000 puff pieces about Odell Beckham, what else is new, and 74 Revis concussion stories. That's been the gist of it, but this is such an important team for both. Neither team is a Super Bowl team, let's face it, although we've said that about the Giants before, and then things have happened. But there is a lot on the line in this game.
How can anybody pick a winner in this game without a coin?
Yeah, I totally agree with you.
Yeah.
They're both like pretty. They both define mediocrity, and they change from week to week on whether they're good or bad.
Here's why. The Jets, at their best, their Jets' best is better than the Giants' best.
Yeah, but the Jets aren't going to be at their best without Darrell Revis.
They played well without him last week. I will say
I think so. I think the Jets have had three games at least this year that's better than any game the Giants have
I don't
played.
The Giants-Patriots game and the way they went after that, that was impressive.
It is. That's again, why this is a coin flip game, because the two teams before Sunday night, of course, that played the Patriots better than anyone were the Jets and the Giants. And they are teams that are capable of doing good things, but they're also, like Wes said, they're right in the middle of the pack.
Right.
Total coin flip game. But I do like what I saw. The Jets had a little more swagger this past week. They kind of looked like the team they were in early October. So I'm going to go with the Jets, as did Connor Orr and Chris Wessling.
I'll probably change.
Okay. And Patra and Sessler took the Giants. Tough spot for Connor Orr, by the way, who was famously picked against both New York teams that he used to cover on a beat for the Star Ledger. He's picked against them almost every week, and he had to pick one this time. He picked the Jets.
I want to add some juice.
I got to ask him about that. What
real
that
tough
about?
Spot for
oh,
Connor
he keeps,
Orr.
He also has picked against the Panthers 7 straight weeks. That's not working out for him too well. But you wanted to add some juice, and so we're sending Connor Orr a couple miles to this game. So that'll
wow.
That'll
oh,
answer.
Right.
That's good. He'll do a good job.
Ooh,
with that.
I just thought of some repercussions to that, but we'll talk
oh,
about
I'm watching
that
the game.
The show.
But, you know.
You might not be writing about it, yeah.
I think we're putting Dan on Falcons Bucks, if I remember.
You can't. You're pulling me off Jets Giants beat.
Well, this is a this is.
I got to pull rank on this. Come on.
This is troubling. There's a
Connor's
lot of,
at the game.
There's
yeah,
a lot
but
of
he could write some sidebars. Some
there's
nice
a lot of
flowery pieces.
Yeah, we need two people covering this 5-6 matchup.
Why does anybody have to be there?
Somebody's got
to
cover Dolphins Ravens, Dan.
He wanted to go.
Great. We will take this up after.
I didn't. It didn't occur to me until now.
You know, I plug your other podcast and this.
Oh yeah,
you
tried. You were trying to take
this
it down.
Is the thanks you.
How
get?
Was I trying to take it down? I was setting it up for a nice plug, and then I was trying to like build some heat around it. Ooh, why is it getting edited? Why is it disappearing? This sounds like a dangerous, sexy show. That's what I was trying to do.
Professional Zeuser.
I was being a pro.
That's true.
Do you disagree? You thought I was
no. That's
shots.
Hey, when I think danger and sexy, I think you.
Yeah, right back at you, buddy.
His brother's Danger.
Yeah, Kevin Danger Hansus. Let's move on. The Arizona Cardinals, the team of Around the NFL. Travel to St. Louis to face the team of Greg Rosenthal, the Rams. Now four.
I want another team. That's not fair.
Now you get them for life.
They are 4-7 in a free fall. You know, they are going to have to go 5-2 just to get to their 7-9 goal.
That might take them 3 years to get 5 wins.
So they, you know, they need to get Todd Gurley back going again. They need to somehow hide their quarterback, which is tough to do in the NFL. Wes, this has all the makings of another Cardinals victory to move them to 10-2. And I know you don't think there's any way that's happening.
The Rams stink. They're so bad they've managed to ruin one of the best players in the NFL in Todd Gurley. They have no offensive line, no quarterback. In fact, the only player doing anything on offense is Tavon Austin, who, frankly, is borderline Pro Bowl this year.
He is. He's been good.
He's making plays every week. What's he up to, 10 touchdowns or 7 touchdowns and on pace for 1,000 yards?
Yeah, 7
but
touchdowns.
The Cardinals, come on, the Cardinals are phenomenal.
Yeah, and I mean, if wherever the 10 touchdowns have come, it's not lately because that offense is averaging less than 13 points during a 4-game losing streak. And Greg's team, coached by Jeff Fisher, has not had a winning season since 2008 and not won a playoff game since 2003. This is the most Teflon coach in the league. This guy keeps a job no matter what he produces.
The most amazing Jeff Fisher stat is he has 6 winning seasons out of 21. As a head coach,
started in '94,
out of 8-8.
Wow!
But that's a crazy mark. When you said you know they've ruined one of the best players in the league, I thought you meant Robert Quinn because I know he's been hurt, but their defense.
I don't worry about their defense.
Well, I do a little bit now. I mean, they're not the dominant group that we were hoping for, at least not the last few weeks.
Who's this week?
Well, you're on the field for 40 minutes a game now.
Yeah, that's part of it. I think it's just caved in. Nick Foles, by the way, will start this game. They announced that. During the program. So there's some breaking news.
Breaking
during
news.
Our pro while we were taping.
That fourth quarter interception that he threw back across the grain was one of the worst throws I've ever seen a quarterback attempt.
We can move on because it's a bad game. But this is the worst spot for the Rams because the Cardinals almost lost last week. So I think they'll be on their guard. And they already lost to the Rams. And it's a division game. And I think they'll be ready to just
They've kept a lot of teams that they're way better than in games this year. On the road against the Rams that get up for a NFC West team, you know, a couple times a year. I wouldn't be shocked if this is a close game.
I do wonder one quick thing about the Cardinals because last year what happened along with the quarterback injuries was the run game fell through the floor. And now Chris Johnson is out until what would be the Super Bowl.
That could be a good thing.
Yeah,
maybe so. He's not been playing well lately. But Ellington, is he out?
Turf toe.
Turf
toe. Day to day.
I just wonder if without the running game being as diverse as it was, if they're going to be challenged to be that offense that we've seen.
I think losing Chris Johnson is a big loss in combination with Ellington not being healthy. That, I think, is a big problem. Because
well,
now you have David Johnson,
yeah.
who you didn't trust to be your main guy, now doing all three downs.
I like it. I'm going on record as saying it's a big improvement. Johnson was running as poorly as any back in the league over the last three
He did
weeks.
Seem finished, so we'll see.
You're not going to believe it, but Connor Orr took the Rams. The rest of us
He is just going for it.
The Cardinals. He's going for something. Moving on, another early game, the Atlanta Falcons at Tampa Bay Bucks. Oh, I don't want to do this game, Greg. I don't want to be the one watching this game.
Well, it's tricky because there's more at-morning games.
Yeah.
Connor's only got one. I'm on the couch.
Can I make a prediction?
What?
Greg will try to convince us that this is a big game in the NFC.
No, I was going to try to convince Dan any game right now with Jameis Winston and Doug Martin is watchable. I think Jameis Winston is one of the most watchable quarterbacks.
It's more the Falcons.
Their uniforms aren't watchable, though.
Damage.
I have no response for
that.
What
if you're nursing a hangover and you have to watch that red or orange and gray?
It's not a good game.
That is troubling.
You know what that's troubling, though, about Winston? And he had four or five plays against the Colts in the first half that were incredible. He has that thing where if he misses a throw, he misses by like 10 yards. That's something that it's hard to fix.
He got destroyed last week, too. The line fell apart in the second half.
Connor Orr took the Falcons in this game. He's out of control. Kevin Patra, the league leader in picks, also took the Falcons. That is also the fan consensus. So people still believe the Falcons can get it together. The rest of us like the Bucks at home. Moving on, the Jacksonville Jaguars are 4-7. Another dispiriting loss for them last week. Now they travel to Tennessee to face the Titans, the Titoons. Mark Sessler, your thoughts on this game? Is there any reason to think the Jaguars are ever going to find some level of consistency and make a run of it in their division?
Well, they don't seem like a team that's going to find consistency this year, but that's also very true of the Titans. So this one isn't, for me, another coin flip. With Bortles, I think it's been up and down. And when I look at Mariota, like we've talked about a lot, there's not a lot around him. But I feel like he needs to have a good month to finish this season, because this team really, they started out with so much promise. And at this point, they're going to get the number one draft pick.
That's,
I mean,
good.
There's a lot. It is good, but there's a lot for this team to do still. And I don't know. I think the Jaguars are the team I'd rather have between the two, roster-wise.
Has anything changed in the 2 weeks since these two teams played each other?
No.
No, other than finally they've taken the Jaguars off in the hunt, in the playoff picture. You know,
well,
the
they're
TV
not.
TV graphics, they are no longer in the hunt. It used to be, it's going to be a four-team race, but these two teams just couldn't get it together.
We also we're not getting banged in a primetime matchup. This time between the teams. One fantasy note, you know, over on the between two legends, of course, the founders of Roto World, the guys that really invented the fantasy game in a lot of ways, at least in my eyes. You know, Mark's also in the room right now. I believe Julius Thomas is going to be a difference maker in the fantasy playoffs coming up. 10 catches last week and 11 targets, over 100 yards. I could see him piling up some statistics down the stretch. Could be a make a difference in some
fantasy
matches.
Or is the best tight end in this game Delanie Walker?
Ooh. Delanie Walker's really good.
A lot of hot takes. That's a good tip, though, Dan, because they're going to throw the ball 40 times a game.
They sure will.
I like it, Dan, because Julius Thomas is the tight end version of Eddie Lacy. You've put out good tape for 3 years. You're a good player. You just have to play your way into football shape after an injury.
Thank you, Wes. That means a lot to me. You have no idea. We all took the Titans, which is surprising because the fan consensus on NFL.com has the Jaguars. Moving on, let's talk about some late games. The Kansas City Chiefs, one of the hottest teams in football currently in position to qualify for the playoffs. A lot of people say that the Chiefs, along with the Texans, should be seen as favorites to get a playoff spot in that big pack of five-win teams. They now travel to Oakland in a huge game for the Raiders. Greg Rosenthal, you can almost say, this is it for the Raiders if they can't find a way to hold serve at home. Hold serve, you're a tennis fan. I thought you would like that. Your thoughts on this game? Are the Raiders going to get some momentum and take it through December, or are they going to fade away?
I think they'll fade away, which is too bad. I was hoping they would get to the Thursday night game they're on in week 16 as still relevant, because they are fun to watch, but they're playing one of the best teams in football. The Chiefs right now, on Football Outsiders, they have a metric called weighted DVOA. That's basically just their regular who's the best team. But it's weighted towards the end of the season. It kind of gives up on the first month that by this point. The number one team in the NFL right now, according just to their metrics, is the Kansas City Chiefs.
Okay.
Best team in the league.
Tell their metrics to go to hell.
I don't think they're the best team in the league, but I think they're one of them right now. I don't necessarily think it'll continue, but how can you argue with what they've done?
No team that has Alex Smith as his quarterback is the best team in the NFL. I'm sorry.
Part of it is because they're very steady. They have him as the fifth offense, the sixth defense, and the sixth special.
Remember,
so no weakness.
You were doing fantasy when this happened. Remember the Sam Congato year?
Yeah, sure.
For the Packers? Spencer Ware reminds me a little bit of that. I'm not saying he's going to be a good player next year, but he's fun to watch. He just runs north and south, doesn't cut, doesn't really do anything, and seems like he gets 6 or 7 yards every time.
Not a medical student like Sam Congato.
But the stars have aligned for what the Chiefs want to do on offense. He's a good fit. He reminds me of good old Sam Congato.
Is it fluky? I mean, you look at their numbers since Jamal Charles went down, and you've got Ware and West in there. They are so much better statistically post-Jamal Charles. And they're also not turning the ball over at all.
They also their offensive line had a lot of questions early. I think it just whatever it was, their offense was not clicking, and it took a little time to come together. And I think they'll give the Raiders a ton of trouble. I think the Chiefs will score a lot of points.
Little Bill Simmons Ewing theory, is that what you're saying, Mark? With Jamal Charles getting
I think we mentioned that with Charles before, and the whole team has come together, but they are a team that is not turning the ball over. And Alex Smith, I couldn't agree more. I don't want them in the playoffs selfishly based on that alone. But Alex Smith is a mistake-free quarterback, and that's what Andy Reid wants.
There's three huge AFC games this week in terms of how the playoff race will look. The Bills game that we talked about with the Texans, the Colts, Steelers, and this one. Because if the Chiefs do lose this, it becomes more interesting. Because I think if they win it, they're just going to start steamrolling.
I know if you work for NFL Network, you're not allowed to mention the name Justin Houston. He doesn't exist. He can hold out forever or sign franchise tag, and it won't be ever a story. But he's one of the best defensive players in the NFL, and he's not playing. So that could be a big loss.
That's a good point.
We all took the Chiefs to win on the road.
Hmm.
Could be a kiss of death there. All right, it is one of the best times of the week. We haven't had this man in the studio for a couple of weeks, so it's almost like a homecoming, a reunion of sorts. He is the host of Around the NFL, the television show on NFL Network. He is the great Andrew Siciliano.
Gentlemen, I'm flattered to be back. Thank you for allowing me back on your Around the NFL podcast couch. After Michael Berger was here last week, I realized you only reach for the stars, and thankfully, I'm appreciative you reached for me.
Well, it was.
He did a great job.
I'm sure he did.
I mean, it was Thanksgiving week. You start to get in the holiday spirit. You have Berger on the show.
Well, it was also an attempt to get on NFL Network more, so you've got to cover all bases.
For those who don't know, Michael Berger, the producer of the Around the NFL television.
How would you explain your relationship with Berger? Would you say it's a horrible relationship,
a strong
relationship, professional?
We're very good friends, both on and off the field.
Very good.
Yeah. I mean, he's mildly dramatic.
He is. That's what makes Berger good, though.
But then again, so am I.
Yes. All right, so Andrew is with us to talk football because Andrew knows his football. I watch you on Around the NFL, and the way you're able to keep a show moving, you're pretty good at it. You're pretty good at your job.
Thank you, Dan. I feel like this is a setup.
No script or anything. You're just kind of not winging it. You know what's going to come up, but there's nothing written down, really. You're just going off the top of your head.
Scripts are boring. Teleprompters are boring.
But you don't like having a Carr brother in there with you because it takes some of your spotlight and shine.
Oh, no, I like working with David Carr. And by the way, the whole no teleprompter thing, I am assisted by our great NFL Network research staff. Today, Law Murray doing the honors on the ones and twos, usually Aubrey Cragen.
Wow.
There you go.
Shout outs.
Yeah, there you go.
See, what a professional.
I know the two of them listen to this show, so they're going to appreciate
good.
It.
Law really does. Shout out to Law.
Law's good
really
people.
Does.
All right, good, guys. All right, let's start talking some football games, and we'll start. We'll continue to dig through these 4 p.m. games. The Denver Broncos coming off one of the biggest wins in recent franchise history for them, a big win over the previously undefeated Patriots with Brock Osweiler. Now they head to San Diego to face a Chargers team that finally got back in the win column this past Sunday. Beating the Jaguars. They had lost 6 straight before that. But, Andrew, and we'll start with you here, the Broncos are, I would assume even on the road, they're favorites here. But the Chargers are a bad team, but not conventionally bad because they still have a Hall of Fame quarterback. This could be a game, right?
I think it is, and I know this sounds odd, and it sounded odd even with you setting it up there.
Thank you.
No fault of your own. Oh. They do score points. He throws for 300 every week, it seems, he being Phillip. I don't know that they do that against this Denver offense or Denver defense, I'm sorry, but it is a road game. They had an emotional output the Broncos did last week, and they're feeling good about themselves. I do agree with you. It's closer than I think many people would forecast, but I don't see San Diego winning this game unless it's a shootout. And if the Broncos defense has a bad day, which is possible, and Phillip puts up his yardage and maybe gets three touchdowns out of this, then it turns into a really interesting task or test for Brock Osweiler to see if he can hang with a team that could score, even with all their injuries, on the road.
Wes?
I'm picking the Chargers to win this game. And it's
wow.
Not because,
interesting.
It's not because I think they're better. When you pick upsets, you often have to go with a gut feeling. This is a letdown type of game mm-hmm. for the Broncos, who were lucky, very lucky, to get by a beat-up Patriots team. And their defense, which everyone out of habit calls the best in the league, has given up an average of 24 points over the past month, which is hardly elite. Phillip Rivers got all of his weapons back last week except for Keenan Allen, and you saw what he did, 4 touchdowns, 300-something yards.
I'm going to guess the Chargers are scoring 24 a game. What are they? Anybody? Anybody got that at their fingertips?
I can look it up for you in a second. What's the situation with DeMarcus Ware?
22 a game.
22.
His absence has to surely be playing a role in Denver's defense kind of becoming more regular as opposed to when they were playing at a high level earlier in the season.
I mean, he practiced this week, didn't he? He returned to practice.
Looks like he'll play, which is huge. And you're right. You would have expected that Broncos defense to really dominate the Patriots offense. I know Tom Brady is the best quarterback in football right now, but they haven't been as special really over the last month. And maybe it's just Ware, and maybe it's just natural they couldn't keep that pace up because they were at a historic pace. This is a fascinating game to me because Brock Osweiler has improved dramatically each time he's been on the field. I count that first game against the Chiefs where he didn't really play very well. The next game he was just kind of there, and then I think he was a huge part of why they won a week ago. So is this Broncos team going to be dominant enough with Brock Osweiler that they just trash lower-rated teams like the Chargers?
And I think it's a great matchup for Osweiler and their offense because they're running the ball almost twice as much in terms of yardage as before. San Diego's run defense is worse than Cleveland's. It's awful. Mm. And so this is a good matchup for this team. It is possible.
Okay.
It is possible. But, I mean, they're an under-center team now. They're not a shotgun team. They run the ball, and Osweiler seems to be what they want. And so I like the matchup.
Andrew, final word to you.
The one thing I would say is this. Despite, we kind of wanted to cut down the Broncos' defense to size a bit, they still did get to Tom Brady 13 times, hit him 13 times last week. Even I realize the Patriots have a very banged-up offensive line, but you want to see another banged-up offensive line? Look at the Chargers, where they introduce themselves to each other every week and exchange phone numbers because they've never met before they go out there and play.
This game, Wes, you thought you might get a hero pick out of this. Connor Orr, the renegade of Randall.
There's no such thing as a hero pick anymore because the renegade always picks the underdog.
What's a hero pick? Just I'm the only one doing it? Okay.
Yes. Yep. Both of you gentlemen picked the Chargers. The rest picked the Broncos. Moving on. Okay, we just talked about the Patriots. They will play a 425 game against the Philadelphia Eagles. And I think, you know, this game's kind of a bummer because back in September, this you would have looked at this game and been like, ooh, this one could be saucy, back when there was a lot of hope in the building in Philadelphia. But now the Eagles seem to be going down in flames, and I'm sure, you know, those Chip Kelly haters out there enjoying it. I don't know, you know, who those people are, but the genius might be getting his comeuppance. And I'll say this, Greg Rosenthal, my fantasy team has Tom Brady on it, and NFL.com is projecting that he scores 43 points this week,
what?
Which is absurd. I don't know where these figures are coming from, but they're predicting a big game for Brady. I don't think it'll be that big, but I think the Patriots are rolling here.
Well,
right?
You better pick up Scott Chandler and Brandon LaFell.
That's what I mean. Come on,
that's
NFL.
That's who he's throwing it to. And I know this Eagles defense has struggled the last couple weeks. They did get the long rest after Thanksgiving. Chip Kelly talking about kind of going back into the lab and trying to simplify things and correct. As a Patriots fan, I was very excited to see this match because they're hurting right now on both sides of the ball, and to get a team that's struggling like the Eagles. I still don't discount the Eagles, though, from putting up a good performance. Why not?
90 points. I'll tell you why. They've given up 90 points the last 2 weeks to the Bucs and the Lions.
It's a good reason.
And Brady's coming off what I think you could argue is his defining game of the year, even though they lost. The game to me that made the best case for him as the MVP this year. To be out there against that Broncos team and move the ball as well as he did with really nothing around them, I at least thought, like, what other quarterback are you going to put in that situation that's going to come up with that good of a result? I don't think there is one.
I don't think there is one, too. Not when you consider they've allowed 10 touchdown passes to Jameis Winston and Matthew Stafford combined the last 2 weeks, and they don't know who's going to start at quarterback. Let's pretend for a second it's Sam Bradford. I haven't seen anything before he got hurt from Sam Bradford that tells me he's going to be much of a challenge here for Bill Belichick. I think this game could get ugly. I think that's the easy answer, but few things are more dangerous, or a few things. I would rather face a lot of things than a Tom Brady when he's angry.
Right.
Angry, yeah. And also, how about, historically, what happens when a middling team goes into Foxborough in December? This is when the Patriots, beat up or not, take care of business in their building. I would be very surprised if this was a close game.
Well, this game reminds me of, it's another opportunity to see how far Chip Kelly's star has fallen, because in 2012, remember, it was the Patriots that had Chip Kelly come in and teach him their offense, and they went out and proceeded, as one of their many offenses they ran that year, to run a billion plays against the Denver Broncos and beat them. And now the Patriots with Josh McDaniels have evolved and moved on from that as their only base attack, where Chip Kelly is not. And so I see a game where New England smacks this team, and it's another reminder that Chip Kelly's offense is not what we thought it was a couple years ago.
Greg, you worried about LeGarrette Blount at all?
No, because he's a limited player. I think he's a fine player, but he's a function of the offensive line, and they can't rely on him too much. I'm more worried about the other guys, Brandon Bolden, James White, getting them into the mix. I think we know what LeGarrette Blount is.
We have the Patriots across the board in that game, gentlemen.
Could get Jamie Collins, Dante Hightower, and Danny Amendola back. It's possible.
And maybe find out what it was that filled Jamie Collins.
Ooh, the big secret.
That would be weird.
Yeah.
Moving on, let's talk a little undefeated action here. The Carolina Panthers are 11-0 as we enter December, and now they get the New Orleans Saints. Once upon a time, going into the Superdome was quite a task against Drew Brees and Sean Payton. Maybe it is not quite that way anymore. Andrew Siciliano, the Panthers take care of business all season, as the record indicates. What tells us that it's not going to happen again here?
Trap game.
Ooh,
I think they're going to win.
Oh.
But I also think that after Sean Payton and Drew Brees were embarrassed, I think, last week, I think that's fair to say, on the road in Houston, I think they get, or they give, one of their better efforts of the year. I don't know what they have left, but I do think that whatever it is, we see it this week against a division foe, against a team that won the division with such a poor record as it did a year ago. I think
you're cool if we tweet out Andrew Siciliano, : Panthers are fraudulent, ready to lose.
Never said that.
Okay. That's how we'll do it.
I will say this. Had a conversation with Thomas Davis, cross promotion here on the Around the NFL
TV
show this week.
Well played.
And he said all the right things, but I asked him point blank. I said, what was your reaction? What was it like sitting on the couch Sunday night watching the Patriots lose? And he said it was, quote, bittersweet. Because, in his words, he wanted to have two undefeated teams in the Super Bowl. That would have been a fantastic matchup. And I said, it still could be a fantastic matchup. Yeah, I guess you're right. Because you guys can both still get there. But I give him credit. He is the one guy in that locker room that is willing to talk big picture. Where everyone else, we're not talking about the record. We are week to week. We are game to game. We are riding the cliches. We are just like our coach. He is willing to admit that he is human and they are thinking big picture.
It seems like every week we come up with a trap game or some other reason to think the Panthers could possibly lose to a team that is much, much weaker than they are. And last week we tried this with the Cowboys, and it was...
That did not go well.
They're going to win.
Panthers smacked them down. The Saints got beaten around by a Texans defense that I believe is the best in the NFL right now. The Panthers are right behind them, though. I think the Panthers are the number two defense in the NFL, and they have stars at every position. I just don't see the Saints getting back on track this week.
I'm with you. I mean, the Panthers haven't turned the ball over in three games, and the Saints, their offense is falling apart, and they're 0-6 when they score less than 25 points. That's how bad this defense is.
Their defense is historically and comically bad.
And we can't even blame Rob Ryan anymore.
And we try to come up with a reason to believe that the Saints are halfway decent every week. This is a team that's lost in consecutive weeks to the Titans, to the Redskins by more than 30 points, and weren't remotely competitive in Houston. Right now, they can't protect. I didn't think Drew Brees could do a lot last week. I mean, they can't go deep. They could not protect him up the middle at all against Houston. It wasn't just J.J. Watt. And now you got Kawan Short. You got Lotulelei. You got that rush. I mean, I think they'll get after him.
Charles Johnson coming back?
That would be big. Did anyone hear the J.J. Watt wired where he said,
yes,
will you please, please help Drew Brees? I like him. I don't want to hit him this much.
Well, at one point he was waving at the huddle, the Saints huddle, saying, I'm coming to get you. And on the next play, got right in the backfield and dropped a hammer.
Well, you mentioned, Wes, the play where they bring over Teron Armstead, who's a Pro Bowl-level left tackle, put him next to your right tackle, so you have your two tackles matched up next to each other just to try to stop J.J. Watt, and it didn't work.
I have never seen a team move their left tackle next to their right tackle to stop a pass rusher. Have you?
I've never seen that, and I wasn't even aware they did that. They did that?
And Watt split him for a sec.
That's unbelievable.
Not a trap game.
By the way, Panthers, they're going to win this game, right? No.
Yes.
Connor Orr, the Renegade, says the Saints knock off the undefeated.
Is he
Panthers.
Just a professional contrarian?
Well, he's in last place.
He would be.
Actually, no. Greg is the professional contrarian of around the NFL. Connor is just—he's a bad boy.
He's a wild card.
I'm not a professional contrarian. I would never pick against.
So you're being a contrarian about that.
The Panthers seven straight weeks.
He just disagreed with being a contrarian.
You're an unprofessional contrarian.
All right, you've got me. You've caught me.
All right, so man. Connor, who's in last place in the picks, he's got to make a move. I guess this could be seen as a desperate act.
Make your move.
He's been doing desperate hacks since week one.
I know. He's an interesting character. We love him. Or Are You Kidding Me was a huge hit. Got a lot of good feedback on Twitter this week. Okay, before Andrew goes, I do want to touch base with a tweet Andrew sent out on December 1st, which would be Tuesday.
Okay. I'm fearful of this. What is this?
Sydney, can I just have a little...
Hello.
damn you, at Adele. He made sure he put at Adele to maybe she'll reply.
Right.
I cannot get that song out of my head, and I assume it's this song.
Yes, it is.
All right.
You started singing along.
Get this song out of my head, and let me explain why. When I was home for Thanksgiving, my 3-year-old niece loves this song. And if I were to post the video of my 3-year-old niece singing and dancing to the song, it would go viral and she'd be on Good Morning America. All right? She's 3 years old and she's doing this interpretive dance around the house. And, you know, 3-year-olds, you guys, you have kids, right?
Yeah.
Like, they speak, but not that much, right? I mean, they speak what they want to speak and sometimes it's gibberish. She knows the lyrics and she's 3. And she has no idea what they mean.
The Adele thing, too. Like,
right.
I love it.
The Adele thing, too, is funny because all her songs are about heartbreak
right.
and sadness and breakups, and there's like a 3-year-old singing the song, belting
right.
it out.
Right, and it's awesome. And then she's just dancing, and it's almost like she gets into trance. Anybody could take out their phone and pull up music and play the song, and she'll freeze, and all of a sudden start dancing and singing. And so when I was home for Thanksgiving – I heard it about 3 or 4 times, and then my brother gave it to me on video. Mm. I showed it to my grandmother, who couldn't be there, and then she laughed, and then it got passed around, and so now I cannot get it.
This is a bit of a deft move here by Andrew, though, because he's saying, oh, it's about my
it is.
Niece. And no, but you also like the song, and probably in the car with the windows up, you might be belting it out, thinking about somebody that got away, yes or no? That's what Adele was – that's what she owns.
Absolutely.
She's on that corner.
Yes,
she
yeah.
owns it. How could you not think of an ex when you hear these songs?
I admit that.
Yeah. Yeah. It's okay.
And that is the – there's no one specific necessarily, but that is the sign of a true artist, right?
She owns that corner.
Who owns that corner.
Right.
And takes you there.
Right. It's like that old adage, now I know what all those lyrics are about. Right? Well, I mean, every one of her songs is like that. And how many times has this woman had her heart broken?
I don't know.
Like, how many times did she milk having her heart broken?
What is she, like 27 years old?
I think it's the same guy, too, that she's singing about, which makes
every
that
song.
Guy must be.
Well, you
got
to be thankful for that relationship.
And Taylor Swift as well.
Well, those are all different guys.
Yeah, that's true. Wes, good job. Look at you plugging
in
pop culture.
I know Taylor Smith.
All right, Andrew Siciliano. He is the host of the Around the NFL television program Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, and Friday at 3 p.m. Eastern on Thursday. It's
six,
a three-hour show.
6 p.m. Eastern.
6 p.m. Eastern. Okay. Sorry about that. A three-hour show beginning at 2 p.m. Eastern on Thursdays. ahead of Thursday Night Football. Andrew, get in that car, crank some Adele, and connect with a pest.
That sounds like a video that I could take and then maybe tweet out.
There you go. Thanks, Andrew.
Good night, guys.
Yeah, that Adele song, guys, it does get me thinking about the announcement that was made at halftime of the Thursday Night Football game that the band Coldplay will be one of the halftime acts for Super Bowl 50. Your thoughts on that, Greg?
Oh, you're coming to me. Well, Coldplay to me, it's hard to get too excited about. I feel like they're like the Andy Dalton. They're like the Dalton scale of
Dalton
fans.
Came out today and said he's a big Coldplay fan.
That's right.
Which makes
That's
a lot of sense.
That's probably why it was in my head. I mean, I'm not gonna hate Coldplay.
I think Coldplay gets beat up on a little more than they should. Like this could have been Train playing.
No, it could not.
Could have been Maroon 5.
Hipsters like to have a lot of hot takes on Coldplay.
Could have been One Direction.
To me, they do not engender any kind of hot take one way or another.
But they don't. What do they engender?
They have nice little elevator music. Like, it's not offensive.
Well, that, exactly, though.
So why is everybody hating
they're
it
agreeable,
if it's not offensive?
But
if something's that popular just for being milquetoast, just for being, like, boring, those are the types of movies you don't like, Wes, right?
But that's also
I would not equate Coldplay to a bad movie, though.
That's also a criticism. That's where I think they get a little too many shots. I think they, if you listen to their early work and their later work, they have evolved as a band. I think they're a little unfair. And we've brought up
– You love Coldplay.
I do. I like Coldplay. My wife loves Coldplay. She would leave me for Chris Martin. Sydney, can you
– Oh, he's available.
Can you help me out? It did with the Adele and the breakup music. I just wanted to share a quick Coldplay story from mid-20s, Dan, a sad period of my life where
you try your best, but
this
you
song.
I love this song.
This song, we went to a Coldplay concert on the Jersey Shore, me and like a bunch of my friends. And
Bunch of bros.
Now, there were some women there, too. It wasn't like Wes's trip out down to the casino or whatever that was.
That was a bunch of. Well, you don't have guy trips?
No, we do. Anyway, so this was at the Jersey Shore. We went to see them at one of those outdoor pavilions, and I had recently been through a breakup with my college girlfriend.
Kirby?
No. This is a different woman. And in the breakup, I had not
Kara?
Gotten over. Wes, can I tell the story? It wasn't Kara either. I had not gotten over the relationship. My good friend Bob, who's a friend of the show. Had also been part of a breakup, and we ended up sitting next to each other at the show. We got separated, and this song came on, and both Bob and I kind of just like watched the stage, and both had like a moment where we didn't say anything to each other, but we both knew we were profoundly sad at the same time about our personal lives, and Coldplay brought that out. So a little credit to Coldplay.
I can appreciate
that. That's something you should get credit for. That sounds horrible.
Why?
It was sad.
It's a human moment.
Yeah, it was human. That's what I'm saying. That's all.
I always, when
I hear that song, I think of being sad at Homedale, New Jersey's outdoor theater with that song on, thinking of my college girlfriend.
I just like that I'm going to be in the same stadium as Apple Paltrow.
I don't think you
Why would she be there?
Is his child not going to be? Probably Paltrow is probably not the last name of the child.
Well, that's
either.
The unfortunate thing about breakups. The dynamic is a little different. I don't know if the kid's going
to
be there.
I would bring Apple to the Super Bowl. How many times is this going to happen for Coldplay?
This will probably be the only time. So there's my Coldplay story. Could have been Maroon 5, and then we would have had a real issue.
I just figured number 50 that it somehow would be more exciting. I don't know.
There are more acts to come. I will say what people this was earlier in the day. It broke that Coldplay was the halftime act of Super Bowl 50. This will be a different type of show where there's going to be other big-time acts associated, so it's not going to be only Coldplay.
Coldplay gets some hate because of how they came into the scene at a time when White Stripes and Radiohead were kind of dominating, and then it was like Coldplay was like the Radiohead replacement, and they're going to suffer by comparison, and everyone's going to like, that's a cheap knockoff.
Radiohead, and then their sound got a little more grandiose, and they got labeled as kind of a U2 knockoff. They never really established their own. They were also they came of age with Travis, Mark, one of our favorite UK bands, and they were originally, Travis was seen as a band that Coldplay emulated.
I'm hearing a rumor that 10,000 Maniacs may be the past hit.
Ooh, really?
Yeah.
What about Emmylou Harris?
No,
future.
She did not. That,
she's not available.
Not a groundswell amount of support for that beyond West.
Lucinda Williams
I would love to see
that. That would be a great one.
But, Greg, you're concerned about whether Coldplay is good at music or not, and that has no bearing on the Super Bowl halftime show, which is all about performance, not about music.
Well put. Chris Wessling knocks another one out of the park. Let's move on and talk a little primetime football, Sunday night football, the Indianapolis Colts, and Matt Hasselbeck, who is, of course, 4-0 now as starter with Andrew Luck sidelined, head to Pittsburgh to face the Steelers. Nice little matchup here. The Colts have won three in a row now. They're over 500, tied for first in the AFC South. And they will face a Steelers team that is also 6-5 and looking to, you know, really establish itself as a favorite to get a wild card spot. Love this matchup. Mark Sessler, who do you think is a favorite? Is it Pittsburgh Steelers a clear favorite in this game, or can you discount the 40-year-old Hasselbeck?
I would much rather hitch my wagon to Pittsburgh for the rest of the season because – Despite Le'Veon Bell being out of the lineup, when they are hot, these two teams played one of the best games of the year last season, and the Pittsburgh air attack can be that same kind of offense, and that's the kind of team you want to get into the playoffs with, where, honestly, it's disturbing to watch Matt Hasselbeck be the guy that finally gets some of the receivers going. And he's going to be out of the lineup at some point anyways. I just think the Steelers are one of these teams with Ben Roethlisberger, if he's healthy, that has a ceiling we don't know.
Wes, do you think it's fair to say that the Steelers aren't getting enough credit for how well they've moved on from Le'Veon Bell, who's such an important player, arguably the best running back in football when healthy?
Yeah, I think that's fair. First of all, as Greg pointed out in this week's quarterback index, the offensive line hasn't missed a beat with losing Marcus Pouncey and their left tackle. They haven't missed a beat. They've been great. And D'Angelo Williams has the exact same stats as Le'Veon Bell with two more carries this year. Same yards per carry. And Ben Roethlisberger, I mean, this offense is too much firepower for the Colts. Hasselbeck can't. He's a game manager. He's not going to keep up with Big Ben in this game.
D'Angelo Williams is one of the best running backs in the league. I mean, one of the best 7 or 8. This year, he looks as good as he ever has. I've really been impressed. He breaks tackles. He's wildly patient. Just wait. It's very similar to Bell waiting.
Wildly patient.
I mean, he's just it's insane sometimes. He's just standing there and you're thinking like, you got to go, man. But that's how good the offensive line is. And that's how you are watching Le'Veon Bell, too. Just like go. And then he does. And it all works out.
I think Wes hit the nail on the head there, because I think the Steelers are going to score points in this game. There's no way they don't. And the Colts are winning these games. You know, they're like 20-14 type wins. They are not going to be able to win a game when the other team's scoring close to 30 points. I think this is going to be a game where the Steelers are going to cruise potentially.
I think this is the game of the week. I do think it'll be competitive.
Really?
Game of the week.
It's the game I'm most excited to watch. Once again, whatever NBC paid for Sunday Night Football, I mean, they just gotta send, trash-talking emails to ESPN every once in a while, like with this lousy Monday night slate. And NBC,
they're doing okay with the games.
NBC, that's true. The next few weeks are ugly on ESPN. I'm just saying they get great games every week. I do think the Colts have shown a little something. They're very feisty. Hasselbeck played a terrific game last week.
Yes, he did.
And he's so calm in the pocket. Like, he's directing traffic in the middle of the play.
He's having fun. He's like, this is the end for
he's
me.
He's just having fun out there.
But
gunslinger.
He is. Like, he looks very – one. Again, I'll say again, I really think Andrew Luck has learned just probably from watching – how he's operated.
Kind of like D'Angelo Williams. There was one play last week where Hasselbeck's back there in the pocket pointing around, and I'm thinking, like, what other quarterback really does that in the middle of a play, that he's that calm in the moment that he can just do that?
The guy on the other side of the field does it. Ben Roethlisberger does that. And I'm not saying he's the best quarterback in the league, but I know there are times when you watch for quarterback index that you have to sit there and watch Big Ben and say, who's better than this guy?
I think he has more good plays than any quarterback in the league this year. I think if he had played every game, he'd be in the MVP mix.
His performance against the Seahawks last week, you look at the box score and his two interceptions, the one Richard Sherman got away with pass interference, and the second one, Big Ben tried to hold his throw and it just escaped his hand, but it was almost a flawless performance.
He got 50 yards ripped away on the stupid catch rule with Wheaton. Nobody bombs the ball. Like, he reminds me almost like, I never saw him play, obviously, but when you watch Joe Namath highlights, like, every, you know, he drops back and just unleashes these shots, you know, and that's what Ben Roethlisberger has become, this guy that just goes downfield all the time.
They're almost a mirror image of the Cardinals, except the Cardinals have a much better secondary.
We all took the Steelers to win this game and move to 7-5. They certainly feel like a heavy favorite to take that wild card spot. We'll see if they take care of business, which takes us to Monday night, who get they get an NFC East game, which on paper probably looked pretty decent in the summer. Well, you got an NFC East leading Redskins team. The bad news is that they're 5-6. They're facing the Cowboys, who are D-E-D dead with Matt Castle at quarterback. Tony Romo refractured his clavicle, of course, on Thanksgiving. So the Cowboys are out of the mix at 3-8. The Redskins got to take care of business here. Wes, you are the leading Redskins supporter in this room. If you do not take care of business against the Cowboys, I cannot take you seriously. Any concerns that they could be flat in this game?
No concerns at all. And from now on, they go by the name the Loathsome Cowboys. Once again, they do something incredibly loathsome. They're not putting Tony Romo on IR because they need him back for the playoffs. Give me a break.
Why is that loathsome?
Because everything out of
stupid,
that,
maybe,
everything but out of that city is delusional.
Okay,
it's just absolutely delusional. Rainbows and ponies. Give me a break.
How about the speaking of delusional, I have a tweet pulled up here. The Greg Hardy winter coat giveaway coming up on December 19th. At Walmart in the greater Dallas area.
I think that's
not
Greg,
buying it.
Greg Hardy's camp winter coat giveaway.
Oh, is he not there?
Well, Redskins are one of these teams that are so much better at home. And Kirk Cousins, what, last five games, only two picks? I know that he goes back and forth, and so do the Redskins. But I'd be surprised if they don't win this pretty easily.
Well, they haven't played any good teams at home, and they've played a lot of good teams on the road. Which
they
is,
played
well,
the Rams at home when you were calling them the best team in the NFL in 30 years.
But here's another team that's not good that they're about to
say
play.
That?
Clearly not.
Did you call the Rams the best team in the NFL?
You had the Rams as like a surefire playoff team when they beat them.
Wow. None of us had the Bengals in the playoffs. None of us had a lot of things.
Yeah, when they beat the Rams, you thought the Rams were a really good team.
We forked three different teams that are literally in the playoffs now with 5 weeks left in the season. You know, predictions go wrong. I had the Vikings in the playoffs. There we go.
I'm not here. The home wins. Here as much as saying the Rams were good when they beat them.
Here are the home wins for Washington this season. Buccaneers,
good team.
Saints,
bad team.
Giants.
Okay,
who's
team.
A good team?
I think the Bucs are an interesting team. They weren't that early in the year, though.
The Saints and the Giants.
I mean, they're not terrible teams.
I don't know.
All those teams are better than the Cowboys.
I agree with that at this point.
Cowboys are done. Got to take care of business, Wes. Be a rough Sunday night for you.
And again, I don't think the Redskins are good.
Show.
I don't think the Redskins are good. The rest of that division stinks, and they've been the best team all along.
Right. I mean, they're not remotely competitive when they play good teams. Cousins isn't really that up and down at this point, which is good. For that team, the team is up and down, but he's just kind of a function of everyone around him.
Yes, so we all took the Redskins in that game.
A lot of these across the board, which historically we get whacked on, so
something could happen. I still cannot believe we all took the Browns to win on Monday night. That's outrageous. All right, that's it for another week of prognostication and previewing and mirth and Coldplay talk. On the Around the NFL podcast. We'll be back, of course, on Sunday night with our flagship show, which you can check out on YouTube and NFL Now. And speaking of NFL Now, we're up in the studio all week. We're always recording content up here, putting that up on the video on YouTube. So we have that playlist, which you can get the Around the NFL playlist. If you go to our Twitter page, the link is right there. If you want to check out some of the stuff we're doing on the video, like the shirts that Mark wears, Wes is wearing a nice form-fitting Henley long-sleeve T-shirt today with a Holy Cow Barbecue, a local barbecue joint hat. Very fetching. So we will be back on Sunday night, so make sure you tune in. Thank you to everyone for listening. Thank you to Andrew Siciliano. That's it. This is Dan Hansa signing off for Quiet Storm, the mailman, the boss, La Cive behind the glass. Till Sunday.